This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, I'm pleased to have in the studio with me Paul Street, who's author of an important new book called Crashing the Tea Party, Mass Media and the Campaign to Remake American Politics, which he co-wrote with Anthony DiMaggio. Paul Street, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Now, there have been other books on the Tea Party, a lot of magazine articles written about them.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you decide to do this one?
Well, you know, one thing that really got me interested in this phenomenon was the amount of significance the media was putting on it, which almost seemed extreme and excessive, the excited portrayals of this supposed great grassroots rank-and-file people's popular movement. I want to be parts of great rank-and-file grassroots popular movements, so I started infiltrating a little bit and attending some of these and researching it and finding it was really no such thing. Most of the people involved that I was able to meet in the Chicago area, in Iowa, wouldn't have really known a rank-and-file grassroots social movement from a hole in the ground. The media and portrayal of them was that they were anti-establishment and against both of the parties, and just about everyone I met was a partisan Republican. They were really what we call in the book super Republicans. They're just really loud, obnoxious Republicans. A lot of defenders of George W. Bush. And, you know, with all their alleged opposition, this big theme in the Tea Party to big government and to deficits, you know, and all of that. So where were they when George W. Bush was driving deficits through the roof with tax cuts for the rich and messianic militaristic wars and, you know, police state interventions and mass incarceration and so on and so forth? And I figured out it wasn't anything like how it was really portrayed. And I started doing some media research and, you know, I was just became sort of at once disgusted and fascinated by how many hits they were getting in connection with real continuing, you know, grassroots efforts. You know what Howard Zinn, the great radical historian Howard Zinn, used to call the unreported resistance, the things that really still do go on. I mean, for example, there were 10,000 people surrounded City Hall in May of 2010 in Chicago, teachers, public school workers, parents, kids, to protest the Arnie Duncan and Mayor Daley's corporate schools agenda. It was a remarkable moment, and it was barely covered. And I remember about the same time, you know, 53 pissed-off white middle-class guys dressed up in colonial regalia and showed up at a car dealership in Naperville, Illinois, you know, an affluent suburb, you know, calling themselves a tea party. And, you know, it was a story. It was
and
a story.
They got much more coverage than the other.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll never forget when my wife Janet and I came up from Iowa City to Madison, and it was February 19th in the middle of this remarkable upheaval. And this really was a movement. It was a social movement, I think, that formed here in Madison against the Scott Walker union-busting campaign. And, you know, it was tens of thousands of people. I was reminded that the only thing it reminded me of was Seattle in 1999. It was just, wow. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, this swirling mass of jovial, excited, progressive, pro-labor humanity, a real rank-and-file social movement. And it was the one day, just by chance, that we happened to be up there that the Tea Party said they were going to have a counter rally. It was February 19th, I believe, which really meant that Americans for Prosperity, founded by Charles and David Koch, was putting some people out there in the east side of the Capitol. And I don't think there were more than 500 folks there, maybe 700. And I went back down to Chicago that night, and the news coverage was as if there were two equal groups of people facing off against one another. You know, the left and the right, as if they were numerical equivalents. And that's a theme. You know, the U.S. Social Forum has 25,000 leftists show up in Detroit last year, and it doesn't get covered at all. And there's a very typically failed attempt to have a national Tea Party convention in Nashville, and you'll find a bunch of media hits on it. So that disparity was a big interest to me.
You've also, in your book, Crashing the Tea Party, have some criticism for the way some of the liberal media, especially, I guess, on MSNBC, were talking about the Tea Party, because did they themselves inflate the importance of the Tea Party?
I do think that the liberal media, it seems like they have a vested interest insofar as they are largely, you know, MSNBC is a classic example, insofar as they're attached to the Democratic Party and to Obama. I think that the specter of this allegedly hyper-potent monster out there called the Tea Party, which the media has helped create, is certainly useful to them, into the narrative that we all need to cower under the protective umbrella of the Democratic Party. And it becomes a kind of a useful scare tactic to some degree. To cloak the right-wing drift, really, of the whole U.S. party system, both parties right now, including the Democratic Party and Obama, and that's a real problem. It also tends to, inflating this group of 60 people led by Michelle Bachmann in the House, tends to obscure, and this actually, I'm sort of surprised, because it would be more actually useful for their narrative, tends to obscure the bigger, kooky, long-term right-wing drift of the whole Republican Party. It isn't just these 60. I mean, they're actually just part of a party that's been going really off the deep end, I would say, for three decades.
And it seems to me that the Tea Party is a misnomer, because I've done some interviewing myself with some of these Tea Party people. Whenever they come to Madison on April 15th, I'll go out with my reporter's pad and just talk to as many people as willing to talk to me. Right. And I always ask them, you know, who you voted for in the last election, and every single one of them voted Republican.
We went to one meeting in particular in Palatine, Illinois, and there was nobody there. There was only like three people there. And there was the one leader who was basically a Republican precinct captain, and he was just droning on and allowing no participation with a series of canned messages. One of the things that shows it's not a grassroots movement is all the Tea Party meetings and websites seem to have the same basic talking points. There was no innovative creation from below. And at one point in the meeting, he said, "Don't tell anybody this, but basically this whole operation is about getting out the Republican vote." The one thing that's very clear about these people is, above all, they hate Democrats, and they think Democrats are radicals. You know, they're kind of like the progressive left, who will criticize the Democratic Party to a certain point, but they're so afraid of the Republicans that at the end of the day, no matter what a Democrat does, they'll vote for them. Well, they kind of, a lot of them had that same kind of attitude about Democrats, and you know, so.
Now, do you think that Tea Party is discrediting itself? There was that recent Tea Party CNN debate where people were yelling out, you know, "Let the person die who doesn't have health
Absolutely.
Insurance.
Absolutely, yeah.
That couldn't have gone over well. And, you know, to the extent that the Tea Party was a or is kind of a confected thing by the Koch brothers and by Dick Armey and by the moneyed interests in the right-wing ideological folks in the Republican Party. I mean,
the hardcore that's been around for years, yeah.
Maybe, you know, they'll pull the brand.
There are indications that's where we're headed with this. It's not entirely clear. Their hardcore support remains pretty much what it's always been. It's about 20% of the population in the CBS and the Times, New York Times, and the Gallup polls describe themselves as supporters of the Tea Party. When the thing first emerged and came out, it was about 20% favored, 20% were opposed, and there was this big mass of people who said, "We don't know enough about it to form an opinion." And what's happened subsequently with things like the debt ceiling crisis, which the media blamed almost completely on the Tea Party, almost to a degree that was ridiculous, but with the debt ceiling crisis, and also with things like Scott Walker in Wisconsin and John Kasich in Ohio, which sort of show the plutocratic reality behind this fake populist movement, now you have 40% lack of favorability. You have 40% unfavorability, and that suggests to me that it's that the brand is going to be spoiling and have to be pulled from the shelf.
I mean, at one point, they were 40% of the American people had a favorable attitude toward them, and that's when I and almost got out of a razor blade because it just seemed like, wow, 40%.
Yeah, but a lot of that was just this thing had been inflated and sold as this great people's movement. And it was kind of almost kind of like Obama early on. It's this clean white sheet and project your aspirations and your hopes upon this and know very little about what it's really about. And you get a lot of some working class people on the outer margins and older people who are very committed to keeping Medicare and keeping Social Security, and then they find out that these are really the same old right, far-right messianic plutocrats who want to rip up just about everything. And that's not where people are, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The people I talked to at the Tea Party rallies, though, I mean, it's not like they had strings attached to them that you could, you know, pull on and you'd get Dick Armey on the other end, though,
right,
or the Koch brothers on the other end. So there was, it seemed to me that you could make an argument that the Tea Party was initiated by the plutocrats, and then that there was some kind of fire that caught at the grassroots, but you don't make that claim.
Well, at the end of the day, we find the essence of it. I mean, basically, we think the Tea Party is an almost epitome of what the formerly left Chris Hitchens once described as the essence of American politics, the manipulation of populism by elitism, you know, plutocratic agendas masquerading in the clothes of the common people. But I do think, yeah, it was initiated largely from the top down. You know, conspiracy theorists, if they wanted to, could have an absolute heyday with the unveiling of this thing and how quickly it just exploded across the country. But no, I think the label, it resonated with something very iconic in people's sense of American history. And there is this kind of free market, vague free market sentiment out there that a lot of people really do have. I do think it takes on a life of its own. And I sort of argue that the Tea Party phenomena could go in different directions. It's sort of it could take on a bit of a life of its own. And where it's going to go is not entirely clear. But I think it may be losing some of its utility to the GOP elites. It was incredibly useful for them in the energizing of their base in the midterm elections in 2010. Whether it's going to be useful for them in 2012 is not clear, and we have kind of a pull and tug right now for the GOP presidential nomination with a sense of Rick Perry being affiliated with that kind of southern evangelical right-wing Tea Party element and Mitt Romney representing more of the muckety-mucks in the Wall Street. It's a classic division within the GOP.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Paul Street, who's got an important new book out called Crashing the Tea Party, Mass Media and the Campaign to Remake American Politics, which he co-wrote with Anthony DiMaggio. You, in a couple chapters, go into the makeup of the Tea Party and their attitudes. And there's one chapter explicitly on the racism of the Tea Party. Do you want to go into that a little bit?
Well, you know, I do think the Tea Party, a lot of what I hear from liberals is that the Tea Party phenomena is just completely about race. I have the distinct impression that we'd have a Tea Party phenomena or something very much like it if Hillary Clinton had won the nomination in the presidency or if John Edwards has. I don't think it's just about race. But the Tea Party demographic and the polling data is really sort of off the charts in the extent to which they believe what unfortunately most white Americans believe, that racism and that race is no longer an institutional barrier to black success at all. You know, unfortunately, that's been ever since the Reagan era, most Americans have polled that way. Most white Americans think that, you know, it's over. The racism is over. The Tea Partiers are just more that way. There is some open level one expressions of bigotry at Tea Party rallies. It's very disturbing. I mean, like the poster that's ubiquitous, that a village in Kenya is missing its idiot, and they're referring to Barack Obama, is pretty bad. But actually, they work pretty hard to marginalize those people now. It's funny when you go to a Tea Party meeting, or you interview a Tea Partier, that one of the first things out of their mouth is, "We're not racist," you know, right, which is sort of like you're protesting too loudly about that one. Where it really goes off the charts and it's hideously awful, and it's open and it's just open bigotry is with Islam and with Muslims, and there's obsession with Sharia law. You'd think listening to them that half of the population was Arabic and it's going to take over the country. And Muslims are probably less than 1% of the U.S., if even that. It's fairly small.
I see stats anywhere between 1%, 2%, 3%, somewhere in there.
Yeah, and many of those are not Arabs, but are black. Some of them are black nationalists, for example. They have nothing to do with the Arabic world.
You talk about the Tea Party people as being, you know, really ignorant and really authoritarian. But you don't see them necessarily as proto-fascist. Where's the distinction?
Well, I do think there's an authoritarian mentality. I do think there is a there's a disturbing propensity for bullying and the use of violence that's consistent with fascism. There is a scapegoating, a refusal to look at the economic elites that have really caused the economic recession, and a horrible tendency to blame minorities and blame immigrants that's very consistent with fascism. There's a closed-mindedness and unwillingness to even moderately entertain alternative opinions to what they have. A lot of this is reinforced by the fact that they get all of their information. It's incredible. The Tea Party demographic is completely reliant on Fox News and talk radio for their information. But they don't seem to have a lot of taste for mass mobilization. They talk a lot about free market. Fascism to me, maybe it's because of my background in history, is a very specific formation. There's some of the same socioeconomic cohort as fascism, too. They're very sort of petty bourgeois and lower middle class. They're not the working class proletarianized victims of deindustrialization that some people on the left seemed early on to want, including Chomsky, seemed to want them to be. That's not exactly – I've met them a bunch. And, you know, there tend to be sort of insurance salesmen and dentists and small business people and all of that, which is kind of the same cohort, you know, of fascism. But the articulation of things in terms of the free market, and actually the discomfort with they don't seem to really want to mobilize a lot of people. And I don't see any dictators in particular that they want to install. They are militaristic. Hyper-nationalistic.
Which is weird for people who say they're libertarian, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there was a Ron Paul libertarian aspect in the beginning, and those people were pushed aside very early on by the Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck types, which is one of the reasons we're not very impressed by leftists who talked a lot about making coalitions around anti-war with Tea Party people. There's not a lot of anti-war coalitions to make. Not a lot to do with them. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I still hear that from people that, you know, the Tea Party, we got to get half those Tea Party people are natural progressives. People will say, you know, we got to organize them. They're our people. And you talk, Paul Street, in this book, Crashing the Tea Party, that there's really very little possibility for this left-right
Not
alliance.
So much, yeah. I found almost zero interest in hearing any alternative perspectives on anything. Did not find very many working class people, no minority people at all. It's really this narrative that the left in the Democratic Party have demobilized their progressive base, but it's not so much that they've lost them to the right. The right is not picking them up. They're picking up some of them on the outer margins, and particularly early on, you know, among the cohort of people who said they had a favorable opinion of the Tea Party, and then they find out what it was really about. It's not what they are. The problem is we've tended to demobilize our people. Some of us have been just too captive to and drank the Kool-Aid of the Dalai Obama, as I call Barack Obama. And we're standing and we've stood our people down and into that vacuum comes. And they do. So for a while, it did seem like the Tea Party was the only game in town in terms of being angry and telling people you've getting shafted. You know, you're getting screwed. And a lot of Tea Party people do think they're being shafted and screwed, and some of them really are. And most of us, in fact, are. I mean, 1% owns a third of the wealth, and the bottom 20% owns 14% of the wealth in this country, and it's getting worse. And the Tea Party at least sounds angry about it. But they don't tend to blame the same people we do, and they don't seem to tend to be our cohort. So we really need to get off our tails and do mobilize our people. That's the answer.
And mobilize them around what? I mean, because you have you're suggesting in this book that the Democratic Party and Obama aren't the answer. Third party's not the answer. Where do you want to mobilize them?
Well, around issues and we're very interested in the development in what was starting to seem to happen in Madison in February and March. Development of alternative social movements. You know, there's a gathering in October right now that's protesting the invasion of Iraq and corporate rule in the country. The October 11th?
October 6th.
The October 6th movement. The U.S. Uncut movement is very interesting to us. That's been protesting the fact that Bank of America and GE and other corporations pay no taxes. You know, we're interested in the politics beneath and beyond just the quadrennial corporate-crafted candidate-centered electoral extravaganzas, you know, that they tell us that's politics, and it's the only politics that matters. So it bothered me when I was here on March 12th and all the people were assembled, the biggest gathering I'd seen in Madison, and I think it was one of the Fab 14 or someone got up and said, here in Madison, it's time to put down your protest posters and pick up those clipboards, you know, to channel all your energy back into the recall Walker campaign. I mean, I want to see if I was a citizen here, I would vote to see Walker recalled. But that rank-and-file grassroots stuff, Howard Zinn used to say, it's not about who's sitting in the White House, it's about who's sitting in the streets, in the cafeterias, in the workplaces, in the schools. You maybe could say the same thing about the governor's mansion, too.
Yeah, I saw that in this book, Crashing the Tea Party, where your last chapter deals with what happened in Wisconsin, Paul Street. And you pointed out that you were worried about co-optation. I think that's what we've had, a lot of that energy for the movement, not all of it by any stretch, but a lot of it was channeled very narrowly into the recall elections for the state senators and some into this recall Walker movement. And the power that was inherent in 100,000 people in the streets was misunderstood or was viewed as something unpredictable and kind of scary.
Yeah.
Even by some of the leadership, I think.
Yeah.
And as a result, we weren't able to use that power in the best way, I think.
I think I heard a figure of, when I spoke yesterday at Rainbow Book Cooperative, of $30 million spent on the recall elections that took place. And I could just imagine a small faction of that going to movement building and to institutional capacity for direct action and the continuation. Just even a small amount of that would have gone to that.
I'm concerned that we will forget that Democratic governors will also, and do in fact in New York and California, go after public sector unions.
They might not completely wipe them out, and that's an important distinction, don't get me wrong, but they have been chipping away at them. And I got an email recently from a progressive in California who said if Meg Whitman had gotten into Sacramento and was doing the things that Jerry Brown is doing right now in terms of attacking public sector unions and other various types of nasty plutocratic things, people be in the streets all the time. And there is this difficulty to wrap our minds around the fact that we have to hit the streets when Democrats are doing nasty things, too.
Speaking with Paul Street, he is the co-author of this important new book called Crashing the Tea Party.
And make the Democratic Party do any of the basic kinds of things that if they did them, living up to their mission, I'm not sure you'd have a Tea Party for now.
Or
a potent one, or relevant.
What would
one.
Some of those things be?
Push going forward on things like the Employee Free Choice Act that Obama campaigned up across the country about, renegotiation of NAFTA with real trade and environmental protections, a significant public works program. And by the way, you call it a jobs program instead of some indecipherable language that no one can completely make out. Try and explain a stimulus measure, you know, the whole stimulus, Keynesian economics or something to everyday Americans. They want to hear it. Have a real jobs program. I'm very much an advocate of a green jobs program. I mean, the Tea Party goes off about Obama being a Marxist or a leftist or something like that. And they talk a lot about the government take over the auto plants. Well, the government came in, did more job elimination than the industry itself would have done, underwrote further capital flight overseas. You know, a real progressive program would come in and convert and put a lot of those unemployed auto workers in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan to work on high-speed rail and on green transportation programs. There's a whole bunch of things that there's a lot of support for.
And you don't think people should necessarily do a third party or challenge Obama within the Democratic Party? Why is that?
Did we say that anywhere in the book?
So.
I don't know if that's true. I'm in Iowa right now. I think it's kind of depressing. I think there ought to be a primary challenge. Oh yeah, I don't. If I said that in the book, I better check it and find out. I think it's a damn shame that there isn't a primary challenge. I think he needs one. I think it would. I tell you that look in Iowa right now. When I compare it with 4 years ago, when all the activity there was around there, things Edwards was saying, things Kucinich was saying, and now it's just like a Stalinist re-coronation. I don't think people should. I tend to be pretty scared of the GOP. I've always thought that Democrats and Republicans are two wings of the property party, but I never say quite Coke and Pepsi. I think the Democrats are corporate Coke. I think the Republicans are crack, you know, in large measure. So I think in contested races, there's an argument to be made for blocking to vote, voting to block the GOP. On the other hand, I think it's dysfunctional to give your vote away in advance. And tell the Democrats that no matter what you do, we will be there for you.
I want to get back to the Tea Party a little bit because this book, Crashing the Tea Party, that you've co-written is interesting to me. And I want to play out the possibility that, you know, say Romney wins.
Yeah.
And there'll be some impetus on the right side to splinter off.
Oh, yeah.
And to run either a Tea Party candidate or someone else. Do you see that possibility happening?
I do see that possibility. Some of these folks really do seem to be carried away with their evangelical and free market ideology to the extent that they've gone off the deep end to some extent. I mean, Sarah Palin recently called. She didn't know. I don't really know entirely what she was talking about for the death of corporate capitalism. I mean, at an event in Indianola, Iowa, at a Tea Party rally. I don't think she really means it and knows what she's talking about, but she does have this kind of nostalgia for this pre-corporate era, you know, this before the progressive age and everything went to hell. There does seem to be this group of people who might very well get behind, for example, Sarah Palin. And that'd be a boon for Obama.
And what about Michelle Bachmann?
I think Michelle Bachmann's a GOP legislator. She'd be another candidate to do that, to go off third party. I just saw her the other night on C-SPAN, and she is still completely, and speaking to California Republicans, identifying herself with the Tea Party phenomena. Yeah, she'd be another. She'd be another possibility. She really is just carried away. I think you're right. I mean, a lot of these folks are not just simply, you know, tied like puppets to the Koch brothers. They really do have their own kind of thing happening. Could be.
And then what would happen then? Not just, you know, would help Obama short term, of course, but the possibility of this, you know, explicitly far right political party. What do you think that would do?
It would splinter the right, and it would help Obama. He'd help him get elected. Who knows? We could then be seeing sort of the unraveling of the GOP as a functional party. It would really be a sort of a tragic self-immolation of them. Maybe that would be a good thing. Maybe we should support that. Maybe I should get to work for that.
Sign up for Sarah Palin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you've written a couple books on Obama. Do you have another book on Obama coming out?
I don't think I can have any more books with Barack Obama in my title. They'll put that in my headstone. The leftist who couldn't stand Barack Obama. But, you know, we'll see. I didn't even think I was going to do a second one. I thought the book that became The Empire's New Clothes, I thought I was just going to do a long afterword to Barack Obama and the future of American politics. Maybe they can bug me. And if the money is right, maybe someone can get me to write one on the whole presidency. He could well be it's very unclear. A lot of people are making very sort of bold statements about what's going to happen in 2012. I think it's very fluid, and I think we just don't know. I do think Romney would be a better bet to capture independence and defeat Obama in 2012. I think Rick Perry will so scare the heck out of Obama, out of the progressive liberal base, that he might well get people off the liberals and progressives off their seats to knock on doors and make financial contributions that Obama could win. I think Romney would be the right choice for the GOP myself.
Yeah, I think Perry would send progressives running back into Obama's arms and maybe some independents too. But who knows? Maybe he'll so excite the far right that they'll get numbers out.
Of the liberals and progressives who complain the most about Obama are also the people that follow politics the most closely and are so scared of the right that they can be counted on to vote for him, and Perry will do that.
Well, we're going to have to end it there. Paul Street, author of Crashing the Tea Party, thanks so much for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.